from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up in this morning's opening hour of Forum, California's state park system is under serious stress, according to a new report from the California Parks Forward Commission. The report includes recommendations to tackle the system's biggest challenges, including a severe maintenance backlog and a lack of permanent funding. We'll discuss the state of California's parks and what can be done to help them. Forum is next after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. On Friday, the California Parks Forward Commission released its report on the state's 279 parks. The commission, which began its work in the summer of 2012, focused on financial, cultural, and operational challenges and called for a fundamental transformation, a two-year turnaround plan to overcome years of scandal, mismanagement, stagnation, and a $1.3 billion maintenance backlog. This morning's opening Forum Hour, we focus on the report and the future of California's state parks. Joining us here in studio is Lance Kahn, who is co-chair of the Parks Forward Commission. Good morning.
Good morning.
Glad to have you with us. And also with us in studio is Elizabeth Goldstein, who is president of the California State Parks Foundation. Welcome.
Thank you.
And with us by phone from Sacramento is Vicki Waters, who's Deputy Director of Public Affairs with the California Natural Resources Agency. Welcome, Vicki Waters.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning to you. And we'll also say good morning to Paul Rogers, who is Managing Editor of KQED Science and also Environmental Reporter for the San Jose Mercury News. And welcome, Paul.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. Let me begin with Lance Kahn, who, as I said, is here with us in studio and co-chairs Parks Forward Commission, and begin by saying that there are many recommendations in this report going up to lawmakers, and if you read the report, you realize the state parks need more money. They need more accountability as well. So let's start with talking about accountability with you, Lance, because certainly the scandals that I mentioned, the confidence, the need for trust is great because of the scandals and the lack of confidence. Millions were unreported, for those who don't remember, and there's concern over money disappearing into a black hole. So let's just talk about how we get the public more confident in how things are operated.
Well, the first step and the linchpin of our report is for the department to create what we're calling a transformation team, a dedicated team of professionals from inside and out the department that is focused on turning around the department, every aspect of it. And our hope is that through a successful work by that team, the department will be able to rebuild its credibility and trust with the public so that it can then go back to the public and say, here are the funding needs that we have, and here's a way to get there.
Well, there's also putting more sunshine on cost of running a park unit, which I think is a very important part of this plan, isn't it? Because donors didn't know and lawmakers didn't know what these – maybe you ought to explain what a park unit is.
That's right. Well, a park unit is simply the organizational unit that manages a particular park or maybe a set of parks. And the legislature has asked the department in the past for a detailed level economics, the financials for each park unit. The department struggled a bit to put that together. They have pulled together some financials that look to that, but they want to do better. And I think what's key to rebuilding the credibility for the department on the financial side is the ability to go with specificity and describe how they're spending the money across different functions and different units so that when they come back to the public with a budget or a new bond, there's real credibility around the numbers.
There is actually a proposal of $16.8 million from Governor Brown's budget as well as $20 million to oversee maintenance. This is not nearly – I mean, it's not necessarily a drop in the ocean, but not anything close to what you need, especially for maintenance.
Oh, that's certainly the case. I think I would look at that $16 million as a push to keep the department at its current service level and keep it stable. But the real work that has to begin now is how do we define, again, with specificity, what are the real needs of the department? At the current service level, what should it cost? and what service level should we aim for? And that's exactly the approach that the new acting director, Lisa Mungat, is taking. She's launched a new project called service-based budgeting, which will get at that exact issue.
And Paul Rogers, let's go into some of the details with you, because there's also a launching of a new source of funding, a sustainable and, from what I read, at least intentionally, or as far as the intentions go, a permanent source of funding.
Yeah, I think in this discussion, one thing that we shouldn't lose sight of is that, you know, California has the most storied state park system in the United States. It's 150 years old. There's 280 parks. A lot of places that people don't even realize are state parks are state parks. You know, Angel Island, Mount Tamalpais, Mount Diablo, the Redwoods in Big Basin, the shores of Lake Tahoe, Big Sur, all of these magnificent places that we love. And the system over the last 30 years has been allowed to slide steadily into neglect. And a big part of that is funding. And so what this new commission is recommending in part is that a new nonprofit be set up so big foundations like Packard, Hewlett, Irvine, Bechtel, those guys can put money in to help with projects. But that in and of itself is not going to solve the problem. There's a lot of discussion in this report about ways to reorganize the bureaucracy and things like that, and those are important. But you touched on it in a big way. There's a $1.3 billion with a B backlog of maintenance at our state parks, and that means that campsites are in disrepair, roads are crumbling, roofs on museums are leaking, and this is because of 30 years of neglect from legislators who have shifted money from the general fund out of parks and forced everybody to pay more for camping, more to get in the parks. It's a neglect from the big environmental groups in California who haven't focused on parks as a top issue, and it's neglect on the media that hasn't done a good job explaining the story. So what a lot of folks who love parks are hoping is that this commission will focus some new attention and new energy behind parks. But the bottom line, we need a lot more money, and we don't have a source identified yet.
Well, let's talk at least about what that source might be. I mean, there's been suggestions of a vehicle license fee, a sales tax increase, a hotel tax. Certainly it's raising the hackles of some of the, like Jarvis Gann groups and so forth, a number of Republicans, to be sure. But the realistic sense of getting tax through, because you need two-thirds, essentially, to get one of those taxes through.
That's right. That's the big question. And, you know, we have gotten taxes through with two-thirds before. And the public generally supports parks. It's one of the least controversial areas of government, actually. I think what this commission is trying to do is, you know, honestly, they haven't really in the report identified a lot of the specifics about where this permanent funding source should come from. They did have some consultants who worked with them earlier in the process who came up with long specific lists. I think what they're trying to do and what they'd probably tell you is they want to improve the park's image first and then go ask people for money. In the end, though, somebody's got to decide what are we going to ask, how much is it going to be. Voters in 2010, which, as you recall, was the Tea Party election, it was the worst election to have any money for the environment on the ballot in California and the rest of the country. We had Prop 21 on the ballot. That would have added $18 to everybody's vehicle license fee and would have basically fixed almost all of state parks' problems. It would have doubled the budget in perpetuity, and we wouldn't be here talking about this if it had passed, but it didn't. And so the question is, do you come back with another one of those? Do you do like they do in Montana, where they have a $6 fee? Do you do a sales tax like they do in Arkansas, where they have an eighth of a cent? There's many different models. You could do a hotel tax. And the question is, you know, what can you get through the legislature? Interestingly, a lot of the Republicans who would at first oppose some of these kind of ideas in the legislature and have in the past come from rural areas whose economies are heavily dependent on tourism. So there may be some way to work with them, because to get two-thirds, you know, the Democrats almost have two-thirds in both chambers. They only need to pick off a few Republican votes.
Yeah, we actually invited Brian Dale, who's in District 1, which is Shasta and Northern Sierra, and is unavailable to be here. But let me just talk about the plan in some other forms with you, Paul. Paul Rogers, again, is a reporter for the San Jose Mercury News and managing editor of KQED Science. And think about down in the South Bay, the recommendation suggests that they're trying to modernize, which actually amounts to essentially allowing for credit cards and ATMs and digital tools, probably the sort of thing that should have been ongoing years ago.
Absolutely. There are five big recommendations from this report. That's one of them, which is basically bring the parks into the 21st century. When we go to parks, we have usually these iron rangers, right? You know, there's this sort of metal tube, and you have to take your money and fold it up and jam it in a little envelope. And that's the same system that they were using 40 or 50 years ago. And basically, you need to be able to drive up to the gate and swipe an ATM card. You need to be able to use a credit card. You need to be able to go online, and as State Parks has just started to do with the Google Street View program, look at what the hiking trails look like. Look at some videos. Look at things on mobile devices. These are what young people do. This is how they get their information. And if you want to grow the constituency for the parks, then you have to make parks available to people in the ways that people use society now. Another big recommendation we talked about, which was creating this new nonprofit foundation to help fundraise. Another one is reaching out more to Latinos and other growing ethnic groups, not only as visitors to the parks, because they're the fastest growing demographic and the future of California, but as staff and managers in the department. Lance talked a little bit about improving transparency and accounting and, you know, figuring out better things like how much each park costs to run, what are the costs and the revenues for each park. We've already started to do that under John Laird, the current resources secretary. We haven't done it as broadly as some folks would like. And then finally, this permanent funding source. You know, like I said, I think that was downplayed more than it probably should have been in this final report. The report is a great start, but in the end, if parks are going to really rebound the way that they used to be in the 1970s and earlier, somebody has to show us the money.
And we should mention the plan also includes better transportation to state lands for urban residents. And let's bring Vicki Waters into this. She's Deputy Director of Public Affairs with the California Natural Resources Agency. You got a 150-year-old department. Vicki, you kind of welcome this transformation, though pretty enormous job to take on, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's a very bold plan, but, you know, we all think it's absolutely very doable. What I can say is that the Parks Forward initiative has definitely given us an opportunity to take a robust look at our department and the way that we do business both internally and externally. You know, during the course of the conversation for the past several minutes, I've heard of, you know, several initiatives that need to happen in the department. For instance, you know, knowing how much a park unit costs to run. And I can tell you that on Friday, we also released our second annual park unit costing report, which we started at this time last year. And what that does is that it gives us a better idea of how much our individual parks cost, how much they're spending on individual different things. And I really encourage people to look at that, because that has a really good breakdown of what it takes to run a park unit within a park district. We also talked about modernization efforts. And I know Paul mentioned the Google Trekker, which is a wonderful project. You know, we have 14 parks in the Bay Area and Monterey areas where, you know, we get a global audience to take a look at our parks and not just visit them virtually, but also encourage folks to go there personally and take a look at these wonderful beauties of California. But we also have a lot of other initiatives that are underway. For instance, the credit card availability. Last year, we had only 58 parks that had credit card and debit card availability. I can tell you that right now, we increased that number to almost 120 state parks that can take credit or debit cards. And our intent is to bring that to, you know, the global use of state parks that charge fees to get in, which is about 180. So we're very close to the number of completion of having this credit card availability. We also launched a pilot project down in Orange Coast District. That's down by our southern beaches, where technology is allowing visitors to pay their day use fees using a smartphone through an app. So we're looking at all of these efforts. The transformation team is something that is already underway, and it was mentioned in the Parks Forward report. We're very proud to say that we already have a team going. It's certainly not the complete team yet, but it is composed of internal staff, current and former staff, as well as outside consultants. And they have a really big job ahead of themselves, not only in implementing a lot of the strategies that are mentioned in the Parks Forward report, but also strategies and initiatives that will strengthen the department over time. And this obviously includes sustainable funding. We're talking about increasing modernization efforts, and also the relevancy of state parks to different audiences. You know, we're not just looking at how do we get more Latino audiences in there, but how do we remain relevant or get ourselves relevant to the millennials, the younger audiences, the folks that are maybe the non-traditional park users.
Yeah, you have a real generational gap here, don't you?
Yeah, and I mean, you know, we actually, in this statistical report where that we released on Friday that also includes the park unit costing data, it indicates that we last year we had 75 million visitors to state parks. And it's not an exact number, but it gives you a sense of, you know, our parks are very well loved across the world. And so we get the visitors there. We have the visitorship. How do we maximize those opportunities? How do we get the non-traditional park users to stay in, you know, overnight camping? And one of the biggest things in the Parks Forward report and something that we have a really shared vision with is installing cabins across the state. And the reason being is that the non-traditional park users we have found don't necessarily, you know, look at, you know, pitching a tent as something that's their thing. And so having more alternative camping opportunities, we feel, is going to really start getting those non-traditional camp users and park users into our parks even more.
So you're updating cabins for more overnight use. Also, I know that in this report there's more talk about amenities for family, things like soccer fields and picnic tables. And one would assume that you're going in that direction of increasing more services generally.
And that's definitely something that the transformation team is going to be looking at and bringing up to a more wide statewide level. So we have the LA State Historic Park, which is currently under modernization efforts, and we do expect that it will reopen to the public sometime this fall. And that's a perfect example of what an urban park should look like. You know, it is going to have several of the amenities that you're talking about, but it's also going to have a lot of innovation and technology that's, I think, going to capture more of those urban users and the non-traditional park users. So, you know, we're looking at bringing these more up to scale with throughout the park system, but we definitely have really great examples throughout the system of things that are already ongoing.
Yeah, Vicki Waters with us from Sacramento is Deputy Director of Public Affairs with the California Natural Resources Agency. Elizabeth Goldstein's here in studio. She's president of the California State Parks Foundation. Generally, Elizabeth, I think you would probably look with approval upon this report, but in some ways you feel it doesn't go far enough?
Well, you know, we really think it's a strong report, and it has many key recommendations, and in particular, a very enlightened vision for what state parks should be in the future. This is a report of great moment for state parks and presents an incredible opportunity for state parks themselves, the department, and the community to make meaningful changes for a better future for state parks. I think what we really believe is that there are several key places where we have more specific recommendations to make, really under the major categories, especially around partnerships. There's been a lot of focus on the new nonprofit, but there are hundreds, literally hundreds of nonprofit organizations, including our own, who've been working with state parks for many years. And, you know, we've made a recommendation that the department actually needs to create a partnership czar, a real structure and culture of collaboration inside the department to really make those partnerships really as effective as they can be. And you spoke initially about transparency to the public, and I want to emphasize that point because I do think it's there in the Parks Forward report, no question about it, but I think it demands a level of emphasis that isn't quite there from our perspective. And that is that, you know, the public needs to be engaged in the state park system. And not only this vision of the park's constituency and users reflecting all Californians, but actually in decision making and understanding how decisions are made in the department. And we think the transformation team, which is really a great step forward for the department and is already making a lot of progress, really needs to think about acting in the way that it needs to go forward. It needs to be a model of transparency and accountability and partnership, even in these early stages of looking at these particular projects.
You think that will enhance and bring in more people?
Yes, absolutely. This is a park system where people not only need to use it, but they need to feel engaged in it. Because if we're going to get to a sustainable funding source, and I disagree with Paul a little bit, I do think this question about credibility with the public is absolutely essential to whether or not there can and will be a sustainable funding tool for
state
parks.
But Paul also talked about crumbling facilities and disrepair and skip maintenance. I mean, the public has to be convinced that we're moving forward on all those areas.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's right. And we've got a little bit of a chicken and egg problem to deal with. We need to build the credibility to be viable with the public and with the citizenry around new funding sources. But we also need to be able to show that progress is being made. And both of those things have to happen. Sort of simultaneously, frankly.
Let me go back to Lance Conn. We're coming up on a break here. Lance Conn, again, is co-chair of the Parks Forward Commission. I imagine the commission feels that everything here is viable, doable, and can be brought into fruition?
This is a doable plan. What it takes is institutional will and leadership and support from the partners that Elizabeth mentioned. This is eminently achievable. And we're encouraged by the administration's response to the report already. In the past, there have been other reports. The Parks Foundation, Save the Redwoods League, did a great report back in 2011 that set out a compelling vision. The department really didn't respond to act on that vision. The Little Hoover Commission came out with a report a couple of years back, similar sorts of plans, and sort of fell flat. Our goal in going after this was not to create a report. It was to create change. We didn't want a white paper that was going to sit on the shelf. So we designed a process that was open and inclusive, that was focused on facts, not anecdotes, and that really was designed to come up with a real game plan, specific, actionable, high-impact steps that could be taken. And we've put out in the report, you mentioned we have a 2-year plan. There's also a 10-year plan aligned with a vision for 2025. Again, I'm encouraged. The administration has already released their own transformation plan in response to this that aligns very closely with it. So now the question is, they've embraced this vision. How do we actually put it in place? How does it get implemented? And how do we follow through to make sure that we're holding everyone accountable to this plan?
Well, am I correct? The California Resources Secretary not only agrees but has already put in place a 15-member team.
Correct.
So things are starting.
Yeah,
to
and move. There's a. They've put out, I think it's a 29-point action plan they're going to prioritize within that. That's already been released. I think we may have a link to it on the website at parksforward.org.
And we have a link to Parks Forward on our website, so you can go read. It's very detailed, and I'd like to hear from listeners about this, your response to the recommendations you're hearing, their viability. Also, perhaps you may want to bring in some of your experiences. I'm already looking at emails about parks and recommendations from those who use them, so feel free to join the program. We invite you to do that now. Our toll-free number is available to you. It's 866-733-6786. We welcome your phone call, so feel free to join us by phone, 866-733-6786. And you can also email us, forum@kqed.org is our email address, or go to our website with any questions or comments, or if you want to join the conversation that way, website is kqed.org/forum, and you click on this segment, and of course you can also tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. Talking with Lance Conn, co-chair of the Parks Forward Commission, and Paul Rogers, managing editor of KQED Science, also an environmental reporter for the San Jose Mercury News, Elizabeth Goldstein, president of the California State Parks Foundation, and Vicki Waters, director of public affairs, that is deputy director, excuse me. I just advance you, Vicki, with the California Natural Resources Agency. You're listening to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny, and there is a report that was released on Friday, the Permanent Funding Department overhaul being the key to repairing California state parks, put forth by Parks Forward Commission, and the co-chair of that commission, Lance Conn, is here in studio with us. So is Elizabeth Goldstein, who is president of the California State Parks Foundation, and with us by phone is Vicki Waters, deputy director of public affairs for the California Natural Resources Agency, and Paul Rogers, managing editor at KQED Science and environmental reporter for the San Jose Mercury News. You also can join us and are welcome to do that. Toll-free number is 866-733-6786. You can also Go to our Facebook page or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is at KQED Forum, or you can email us, forum@kqed.org. Here's an email from Andrew, who writes, "The Parks Forward Report recommends the establishment of a new nonprofit to support the parks. In fact, such organizations now exist, the California State Parks Foundation and many friends of groups at various parks. I volunteer for Friends of China Camp and can attest that the Cal Parks Foundation and Friends of China Camp have raised hundreds of thousands of dollars, built a strong foundation of operating and improving the park in cooperation with local state parks officials. Establishing a new nonprofit seems to ignore and at worst undermine our organizations and the work and donations of a lot of people since the park closure threat of 2012. And Elizabeth Goldstein, get your take on that.
Sure. You know, I think, we are a statewide nonprofit dedicated to protecting, enhancing, and advocating California state parks. And we've been leading for a long time in many of the key areas that the Parks Forward Report identifies as critical to the future of state parks. And we're not alone. There are lots of other nonprofit organizations who've been doing the same. And in fact, we've been working on a day-to-day basis to provide funding and capacity-building support for those hundreds of nonprofit organizations that are already working with the department. We've been, in addition, doing programs to get low-income kids and youth outdoors in summertime to reduce summer learning loss, build parks in urban areas, including a 34-acre expansion of the first urban state park here in the Bay Area at Candlestick, and engaging new communities in state parks through the telling of their histories as seen in state parks. We wrote and sponsored the legislation that actually allowed nonprofit organizations to run state parks. We really think that that there is an important role for a new entity to put its shoulder to the wheel. And we have focused really on critical roles that aren't currently being filled by DPR, and that is enterprise and marketing functions. We actually look forward to working with all the partners that come forward, but it has to be, to your writer's point, it has to be an organization that actually fills gaps rather than creates duplication or undermines the functionality of any of the nonprofit organizations already in the space.
And Michael, to add to that, this is Vicky. I will say that the transformation team is working on one of these aspects. That's one of their priorities. And Elizabeth is absolutely right. We must first identify what the problems and the challenges are that this entity can solve. We must answer the question, why do we need this partnership or this entity? And what issues can they solve? And I will say that we value our existing partnerships very much. You know, they really stepped up to assist and help the department during a very difficult time in the past couple of years. And so, again, that's something that we're also looking at. How do we maximize those partnerships? We have over 1 million volunteers in state parks every single year, and that number is amazing, considering that volunteers work for pretty much, no money, and they really give us their time. But there's so much enthusiasm and support for state parks that, we really value that. And so we're trying to maximize these partnerships, not just from the nonprofit lens, but also, volunteers and innovative relationships with, local and federal entities and philanthropic groups. But again, as far as this nonprofit entity goes, I know that that's something that the transformation team is currently looking at, and it's really identifying what the challenges are so that we can, solve those challenges.
All right. I want to go back, if I may, to you, Paul Rogers, and get your response to an email from a listener named Mary before I go to our calls here. And she writes, "I read the draft report of the commission regarding California state parks. I was very disappointed that the commission focused exclusively on generating more revenue. There is no indication in its recommendations that it considered the very real possibility that how the state park system chooses to spend its money could be a factor in creating its problems. In the past 25 years or so, the state parks have wasted millions of dollars on eradicating non-native plants and trees. Many of these projects were extremely controversial and were done despite strong opposition of the public. Some of the projects have done irreparable damage to the environment, such as removing European beach grass that stabilized mobile sand dunes, which are now killing trees and inundating neighboring private properties." Paul?
I disagree with most of that. Removing non-native invasive plants is an important way to restore natural habitat. The problem, though, with state parks and in terms of its financing is that there has not been a commitment from the political leadership of the state to support it with general fund money or to find a dedicated source. Yes, there are lots of wonderful volunteer groups around the state, and Elizabeth's group does fantastic work. But these groups are not big enough to solve the problem. The budget of Elizabeth's group is $14 million a year. The budget of State Parks is $500 million a year. There just aren't enough volunteers in the state to fix what's broken. And what's broken is the lack of political leadership. We talked about the crisis of closing state parks. That was entirely elective, first by Governor Schwarzenegger and then by Jerry Brown. When Jerry Brown said he was going to close 70 parks in 2012, that was a quarter of the state park system. It had never been done in the 150-year history of state parks. He said it was going to save $33 million. $33 million on an annual budget of $100 billion. So that's less than a third of 1%. Why was he doing that? The reason he was doing that, a lot of people think, was to get the middle class to vote for Proposition 30, which was his tax increase. If you say we're just going to cut programs for poor people, then quite often you won't get middle-class voters to care. But you have to find politically things that middle-class voters care about. So you say we're going to cut schools, we're going to cut parks, we're going to make you stand longer in the DMV line. And what Brown did, in the view of a lot of parks lovers, was reckless. It got people thinking that we had to close these parks and that there was no other choice. And in fact, we didn't. And it was simply a long line of bad decisions by governors to not devote resources and to use parks as a political football.
Let me bring on our callers, and we begin with you, Rob. You're on. Good morning.
First, I'd like to address what your guest just said, which is I totally agree that the political system likes to play football with things that they think people will scream about if they threaten, and then people will vote their way.
Speaking about playing football, there may be people screaming that we're not talking about the Super Bowl, but here we are.
About closing the parks. But what I was going to say is I'd also like to address that what he said about, you know, looking at how the park system spends their money. I think that's worth looking at, and this non-invasive species thing is really, I don't agree with all of it. But anyway, my point was, how do you guys attract people to the parks to generate more money and more pride in making it a priority without the parks being loved to death, being overrun? You know, if I want to make a reservation to go to Samuel P. Taylor State Park, it's months and months in advance because it's totally booked. If you want to try to attract more people to the parks, how are you going to keep them from becoming overrun and worn out?
A lot of concern probably along those lines, Lance Kahn. What do you say?
Let me address two things. One on the financing. The report is not just speaking to revenue generation. There, if you think about it, you can focus to find money. You look at the costs that are being spent. Can you find efficiencies? Then you look at revenue. Well, there's appropriated money, there's borrowed money, and there's money that's granted to you. We're suggesting to make progress across all those fronts, and we expect there will be. And once the department has sort of rebuilt its budgeting and financial systems, we think they'll be in a place to credibly come back to the public to ask for money. On this point about attracting users and not loving the parks to death, I'll give you a simple example that's kind of one of my pet projects that Vicky mentioned, the cabins that they're looking at installing. That's a perfect example of where you can bring in new attractive accommodations that don't take anything away from existing parks. The system currently has about 15,000 campsites. And I believe they're about 100 or 150 cabins. I may have the number off a little bit. Even if you did 1,000 new cabins in existing campsites, it's still a fraction of the existing campsites. You haven't done anything to expand the footprint in a park. And yet you've created something that we know from our research will attract exactly the audience that is the future of parks and are the future voters that are going to support these public requests for money.
Well, you mentioned before wanting to attract more of a Latino population, because that certainly has become a major population in this state. And I got an online comment from Richard Rojas, retired California State Park Superintendent, who writes, in reading posts by readers, it's clear that many readers chose not to read the Parks Forward Commission's report or instead chose to share their ignorance by claiming that PFC's recommendation to improve access, diversity, and inclusiveness in California state parks for Latinos and other underserved residents only means more soccer fields and pristine parks, loud music playing in trails, more graffiti, and uncollected garbage. Moving forward, groups like Latino Outdoors and others are ready to educate, teach, and lead our community to become responsible, active park users and stewards, too. Then on the other hand, we've got a lot of recommendations here, and I want to get to more callers. But there's a listener who writes, Nora from Oakland writes, I took my elderly mother to the Torrey Pine State Park in Del Mar over the weekend. There are steps into the building, but no ramp or other handicapped access to the museum. I was surprised at the lack of access. Isn't ramp access not a state requirement, Elizabeth?
Well, I think the point here of that story is that there's many improvements that are absolutely fundamental to the state park system which have not been able to take place. And that is a money issue, to Paul's point. There's no question about that. And this system is should be as attractive as it can be in every physical way to its usership. But it also needs to be attractive from a programmatic perspective, and it needs to tell the stories of all Californians. Those are the things that are going to not only engage visitors as they come to state parks, but also to make them want to step up to support the park system through legislative pressure and also a ballot box pressure.
And more of your calls. Let's go next to Antonio. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, sir. You're on the air. Hi.
Thank you. I just wanted to mention about the partnerships that everyone's talking about and if there was going to need to talk or plans to partner with Native peoples. I've gone to several stewardship conferences, namely one in the Presidio Club a few months ago, and there was talk about that, but nothing about partnering with Native groups or Native tribes, whether they're federally or unfederally recognized. And I don't know what that's about, if this is just arrogance or is it just convenience to keep shutting us out.
Yeah, Elizabeth, go ahead.
I just want to give you one example where partnering is with tribes has been absolutely essential. The California State Parks Foundation, with a coalition of other organizations, has been trying to prevent a toll road through a state park in Southern California called San Onofre State Beach. And the Native American tribe, the Panhe, have been very much engaged in that fight because there's very significant cultural sites there. And they've really stepped up and been a part of the advocacy effort all along. And been welcomed and trumpeted in their desire to protect these very important sacred sites for their tribe, but also for the rest of us in California.
And feel free to join us by phone. The toll-free number for your calls, 866-733-6786. We'll go to David next. David, you're on. Morning.
I had actually a comment and a question. With the subprime scandal, there was a lot of land deeds that were disputed, and I'm wondering if the parks would have been able to snap them up. But the other is kind of a bigger picture regarding the budget. As global warming progresses, the standards that people have been trained in are going to have to change. So the budgets would have to change, the maintenance of the parks, the drought conditions, all sorts of things like this. So is the park department, or in the larger sense, there are a variety of different parks departments, are they actively training toward the new conditions that we're going to expect with global warming and then setting their budgets accordingly?
Yeah, what do you see here, Paul Rogers?
Yeah, it is something that people are talking about at the state level and also at the national park level. You know, I was in Glacier National Park a few years ago with the National Parks Director, and he pointed out that in a few decades at the current rate of warming, there won't be any glaciers in Glacier National Park. So we're certainly going to see changes, sea level rise, which is already happening, more increased forest fires, less snowpack. Those things are all going to affect state parks. I just wanted to mention one other thing that an earlier caller had talked about the budgets and where to cut money. You know, it's important to realize that we have money to buy land for state parks. Voters have been very generous over the last 15 years, passing billions of dollars in state bonds for water and parks projects. The problem is you can't use those bonds to run the parks. You can't use them for operations. You have to only use them for facilities. So we have expanded the size of state parks by tens of thousands of acres, but we haven't added the rangers and maintenance people and ongoing budgets to keep up with it. The state park staff right now is about the same size, same number of people as it was 20 years ago. Even though the visitation has gone way up, even though fixed costs like health care and other costs have gone up, And even though there are more acres of land there, we just haven't kept pace with the operations side. It's sexy to tell people, give us money and we'll go buy this gorgeous beach or this gorgeous mountaintop or we'll build soccer fields. But it's not sexy to say we need to hire 100 more people to do campfire programs and 200 more people to clean the bathrooms and 200 more people to fix all the roofs. That's what we need.
Speaking of bathrooms, Vicki Waters, let me go to you actually on a couple of things. Here's David from Berkeley who writes, when will the California State Parks decide to put soap in all the bathrooms? Don't tell us we can't afford to have soap in the bathrooms. It is a danger to public health to not have soap in the bathrooms. And another listener writes, sort of bracket these together, biking is consistently not allowed on state park trails, excluding a growing and affluent source of users. Is there any movement toward reviewing this policy, Vicki?
I would have to check on the
soap and bikes. Yeah,
I would have to check on the biking one. I do know that we have several trails that are open to a variety of recreation, including biking and including equestrians, and of course, good old hiking. But I can tell you that on the bathroom side of things, we do try to strive to maintain the public restrooms as clean as possible. Like Paul said, we do have challenges with maintenance staff to be able to keep up with the maintenance needs and the facilities that are there. However, we have found some challenges with having, soap in certain bathrooms. Like, for instance, in certain bathrooms, we have heard anecdotes that if we have soap, they get emptied by, certain visitors, and so there you are, and you don't have soap. So it's just having the appropriate amount of staff and the appropriate amount of resources to make sure that we're, one, making sure that we have, checkpoints at certain parts of the week or certain times of the day or certain times of the week where we know what the needs are and where we need to dedicate those resources.
Well, let me ask you one more along the same lines, Vicki, and that's from a question sent us by a listener named Dennis. He says, is there a move to lower the price of state park campgrounds? $35 to $50 a night is way out of line with what other states, counties, and federal campgrounds charge.
Right now, that's something that the transformation team is probably going to be looking at. The price of the annual passes, the price of the camping, the price of the day use fees, it needs to make sense for us to identify the sustainable funding that we're talking about. Is that something that is truly making a difference in the state parks budget, or is there something else that we should be doing? So, that's what the Park Forward report is talking about, just looking at the system as a whole, and where is it that we can make the improvements, where is it that we can make the efficiencies. How do we strengthen the department, both for the visitors and, of course, for the staff and the supporters? So, again, that's something that the transformation team is definitely going to be looking at, and they will be making the recommendations, as the two-year commitment moves forward.
And I want to read one more email before I go to more of your calls. This is a listener who writes, how could we have an immense state GDP then distribute crumbs to our parks? It's a culture of negligence of our parks. Let's distribute tax money fairly to fund our parks. Let me go to another call here. And Peter, that's you. You're on. Hi.
Yes, hi. First of all, I'm concerned very much about privatization and the undue influence that can bring. Second, rather than spending a lot of money on figuring out how to make payment for fees easier for those who can pay to play with smartphones and whatnot, maybe some or all of that money should be used to actually reduce fees or preferably get rid of them altogether, because as we all know, any kind of fee is a real barrier to access, especially not only because of the complexities of paying and so on, but just simply because of the fee on for the lower end of the income scale for those people.
You want to talk about fees here, Lance Kahn?
Sure.
In terms of particularly what's in the report?
Yes, I think Vicki touched on it a bit. One of the key activities of the transformation team will be look at pricing in general across the system. How do we price parking, overnight accommodations, passes, my intuition is that there is a way to both exact appropriate and reasonable fees from people who can pay, while at the same time ensuring that there is either affordable or free access to everyone else. You just have to be strategic about it. You've got to put the work in and bring some marketing expertise to bear on the problem.
Let me bring another caller in, and Mark, that's you. Mark is calling us from Los Angeles. Hi.
Hi. We have a real shortage of parks in the city of Los Angeles, per capita, and we have a very high poverty rate. And I wondered, are there any plans and, you know, there's, you know, not everybody can drive to parks. Are there any plans to improve access to urban or create some urban parks in L.A.? Because, I mean, the kids don't have anything to do but gangbang, basically, because there's no place for recreation.
Yeah, it's an important question. Paul Rogers, some thoughts from you on that?
Probably better for Elizabeth. There have been a number of investments over the last few years in urban parks. Somebody talked earlier about the impact of Latinos and what does that mean for parks. Well, there was an amazing group of exit polls that were done after one of the state parks bonds, maybe 10, 15 years ago, and what that found was that Latinos voted in a higher percentage in support of parks bonds than any other ethnic group, more than African Americans, more than Asians, more than white people. And that really kind of opened the eyes of a lot of the environmentalists who've been pushing parks funding for years. They realized that if you include urban parks in these funding measures and don't just put bonds out there to buy mountaintops and forests, you actually have a much better chance of passing. And so you've seen, as I say, larger park bonds over the last number of years with more money for these urban kind of projects. But, yeah, absolutely, they need more. And the question is, why do people who live in urban areas support parks more? Because they don't have backyards. And the previous caller was right. If you raise the price, as state parks has continued to do, you drive folks who are lower middle income and lower income out. And why have we raised campsite fees and why have we raised entrance fees?
I think those are important questions, and also so is urban accessibility, obviously. And just want to remind you, you're listening to Forum, and we're talking about state parks and a new report, and this is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. So for more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. And Elizabeth, do you want to weigh in on this question?
I do. I think this question of whether or not state parks has a presence in urban settings is absolutely essential. And in Los Angeles in particular, both Baldwin Hills, Rio de Los Angeles, and L.A. State Historic Park, which was mentioned is being completely redone and will be reopened in the fall of 2015, are all ventures to do more placing state parks in places where they're accessible to urban populations. And also, I mentioned Candlestick State Recreation Area here in the Bay Area as a similar project. But I don't think that's the only thing that is important. I think it's really important to create visitor services that are welcoming, even at places that are more distant from urban settings, that if people see themselves as being able to have sufficient amounts of information so that they feel like they can encounter a park that may be a little bit further away and feel safe in encountering it, so on, they're going to feel like they can go to those places. And that's really key. People come often to state parks for the first time because of a special event. And once they're there, they can come back. So I think this is about creating transportation, new parks in urban settings, but also programming and visitor services that really welcome new audiences to state parks.
And we're going to welcome another caller here in a moment. But Vicki Waters, you wanted to say something?
Just something really quick on that end. So yes, absolutely, the urban parks are a priority for us, as well as, you know, the overall system as a whole. But I will say, though, that, the state parks, they do actually give grants out to local parks so that they can serve in these functions in the urban areas. For instance, we give out grants from Prop 84 to support local state parks, soccer fields, pools, et cetera, et cetera. So that is a function that perhaps, it's part of the story of state parks that perhaps we don't tell so well. And it's something that, again, the transformation team and the department, as we move forward, pass this Parks Forward report, we're going to be telling a little bit better.
Let me get your response, Vicki Waters, to another email here from a listener. It says, sometimes it's the parks with the most usage that are in the biggest danger of being closed. Hollister Hill State Vehicular Recreation Area is probably expensive to operate and maintain. Almost all Bay Area dirt bikers are forced to ride there. We should keep the highest traffic parks and close low usage parks. What do you say, Vicki?
There are no plans to close any state parks, I can tell you that. I do know that we're trying to figure out the best way of how do we use our particular resources and staff within the districts. And that's part of the park unit costing report that I did mention before. So the Hollister Hills, I believe that that's a state vehicle recreation area, and that's run by the OHV division under the department, and you know they're financed through a separate fund. But however, you know, when we're talking about the best usage of resources and staff, that's where the park unit costing report comes in. That's where the service budget plan comes in, as Lance mentioned before. And so it's, again, expanding the resources to the best of their use. But, as you know, we have no plans of closing any state parks. We are looking at expanding the resources there.
And we'll extend to Peter at Berkeley. Peter, join us.
Thank you. Very quickly, a comment and a question. Question, University of California, state universities, community colleges, are they already involved as partners? What a great opportunity. Comment, to have a bold statue at the top of Angel Island to rival or better to complement the Statue of Liberty with a theme of peace, solidarity, community, responsibility. You know, people working together, so a group of images. And then partnered with a floating theater on the bay, promoted by a Star Alliance Foundation for All.
Okay, so, we're back to partnerships. Let me go to you on this, Elizabeth.
Sure. You know, the California University System and the state colleges are very engaged in state parks. And we, with a number of other partners, Save the Redwoods League and a number of funders, have actually been working with the University of California at Merced in hopes that ultimately there might be a leadership institute at the state parks level that mirrors the one that they run at the national parks level. We are really hopeful. They seem very dedicated to creating a broad opportunity for the state parks system to engage with universities all across the system. And I think their leadership would be enormously welcomed.
And the statue on Angel Island, we'll have to wait and see if Peter and others can get that going. Let me thank those of you who joined us this morning. Paul Rogers from the San Jose Mercury News and KQED Science and Environmental Reporting. Elizabeth Goldstein from the California State Parks Foundation. Lance Kahn, co-chair of the Parks Foundation Forward Commission, and Vicki Waters from the California Natural Resources Agency. When we return, Michael Shermer, famed skeptic, will join us in studio. Stay tuned for that, and thank you for being here for this hour for all of us here at KQED. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.